Robert Plant is our guest today on the World Cafe with music from his new album, The Mighty Rearranger, recorded with his new band, The Strange Sensation. An album that effortlessly combines memories of Led Zeppelin, the band that Plant could never really divorce himself from, and his evolving interest in African music and English folk. You can never take the blues out of what Robert Plant does. One of Led Zeppelin's biggest hits and a crowd pleaser in its current arrangement is a new version of Whole Lotta Love, Led Zeppelin's first big hit. Ever wonder where that song came from? Here's Muddy Waters.
I ain't fooling, you be schooling. Babe, you know you need cooling. Warm on way down inside. Woman, you need love. You got to have some love. She got to have some love. She got to have some love.
Muddy Waters, You Need Love, the inspiration for Led Zeppelin's Whole Lotta Love. Our guest today, Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin, joins us along with Justin Adams, his guitarist and main musical collaborator, in his new band, The Strange Sensation. They have worked together on two albums, Dreamland and the latest, The Mighty Rearranger. During the show today, we're going to hear live in-studio performances of songs from the new album, plus reworked Led Zeppelin classics. Robert will help us understand his journey from Led Zeppelin to the world music influence Strange Sensation. We start off talking with Robert Plant and Justin Adams about the process they used to meet the high expectations they had for the new album, The Mighty Rearranger.
We all knew that to go anywhere special with the ambition and the kind of musical tastes that we all each individually have and had at the time, that we got to do something very special or not bother, because my time is so precious for me, but everybody else's taste buttons are so, the finger is always ready to press the button and denounce. So we created a sort of, if you like, a judge and jury within ourselves, mm-hmm. as to how far we can go and how commercial or how the root of what we want to do has got to come from a really solid, grounded and imaginative place. And we wanted to create a brand new way of looking at contemporary rock music. Rock is a dirty word now, and it shouldn't be, really, you know? So we fretted and scratched our heads and lost sleep and lost time and lost a bass player and got another one. And the whole thing kind of came round and opened like a very reluctant, beautiful lotus into this great, unusual flower, this amazing bloom. And with all great blooms, it takes a lot to get it right. And I think, you know, one way or another, we got it right by everybody feeling that they could extend themselves without taking over at any particular point. And the greatest compliment that's been paid to us by so many people is that it seems like, from the beginning of track one to the end of the album, that it's almost a seamless marriage of intent, sound, and style. Even though we move through the sort of landscapes of, you know, American desert music, if you like,
right,
into African rhythms and the stuff that Justin's brought to our party, and the willingness by everybody to actually take that on and learn like kids, and become quite besotted by the whole idea of this huge landscape ahead of us now to explore.
Wanted to play a live version of the Enchanter, which we have a chance to record with you all. Tell me about some of the things that are in this. What you see rhythmically that is part of this from your viewpoint, Jess?
From the track, The Enchanter?
Yeah.
Well, I started the guitar on that one with like a blues tuning, but then sort of finding some Islamic kind of ways to play it with the same blues tuning, and there's a certain thing. I know Robert likes this half tone when a piece of music just goes up a half tone and down again, so I put one of those in to see if that would
see my eyes light up,
to see his eyes light up, exactly. And and you know, sure enough, that was one of the ones he picked up on and brought to life with the lyrics, really.
Well, this is a performance of The Enchanter from Robert Plant and The Strange Sensation.
For me, she's leading the man who's beating the drum, and love is all around her on the road to the sun. Lost in conversation with the birds of the air. She's trading information in a world without fear. She's fixing up a potion made of laughter and love, love, love. I will follow the enchanter on the road to the sun. Searching for signs. Her eyes promise mystery and her treasure to find. She's mixing my emotions, it's so easily done. Easily done. I will follow the enchanter on the road to the sun. Free.
Robert Plant on the Strange Sensation, live recording of what you will find on the Mighty Rearranger album. Robert, I've read some of the things you've said about your first trip to Morocco, and when was it?
I can't remember, really. I think it was about 1971, and I went sheerly as a tourist. I mean, bearing in mind that at the time, all my life until now, really, I've lived in the part of the United Kingdom where there's been a big Asian influx, mm-hmm. growing and growing and growing, and the culture has got bigger and bigger. You can see how it's happened here in America, that they're very self-sufficient, fantastic music, great color, beautiful people. The whole deal was brought so much flash and reverberation to the kind of dull post-war United Kingdom that was, I mean, we really did suffer at the end of the war. And my parents, it was a pretty dour life that they led, but always striving. And then the Asians came striding through with this almost pizzicato Bollywood strings cascading through the dark streets of Middle England, you know. And so I was always intrigued by this, and I loved the look of... I married a woman from India. I can say I loved the look of the women, but I actually... I tried. I still love the look of the women from India. And the idea of going to North Africa was very appealing because it seemed as if, romantically, it was something I didn't quite understand or know about. And the whole idea of the closed, what I thought, shrouded culture at the time... which I found out later I was quite wrong about.
How so?
Well, because Morocco is quite spurned by a lot of the Arab world as being sort of the Maghreb, the land in the West. But in some maps of the Arab world, it doesn't even appear on the maps. It's just like a little chunk on the west coast of Africa, West End, where there's not even a name for it. So it's almost with the Berber influence and Jewish communities and the Islamic, the Muslim world, it's much more of a cocktail, a masala, than I think you find further east. And it was spectacular. I went there as a tourist with my wife, and we stayed in the Holiday Inn in Marrakesh. And the next time I went back, the Holiday Inn, the King Hassan II, I think, had decided to give it to his wife for a birthday present. So she then owned the hotel. It became somebody else's hotel in that move. And I began to understand that in Morocco there was a kind of a whimsical sense of humor where things could change overnight and rapido, you're in another world. You can get that feeling when you just turn a corner of a street and you're on the same block. You're just on the other side of it and you're back in the 14th century. So I was just blown away. And then my lady went back to England, and I started getting Jimmy to come down, and we started exploring, and we took a big Nagamichi portable tape machine up into the Atlas and started recording Berber women in the fields who were singing around. I mean, bearing in mind that there were no gigs per se, there were classical Arab concerts in Casablanca and Rabat and Meknes and so on, but down in the south, music was based around weddings, circumcisions, the various times of the year, the equinox, and that sort of thing. It was really fantastic. Market day, farmer's market in the middle of the foothills of the Atlas Mountains. And it was always something where people were about to clap their hands and about to shuffle their feet in the dust. And it was superb. And I bought my ticket for life.
Yeah.
Can't get away from it now.
Robert Plant and guitarist Justin Adams. More performances coming up, and we talk about Robert's African travels, including playing at a music festival in the Sahara in 2004 for an audience of nomadic Tuareg tribesmen who greatly outnumbered the adventurous Europeans present. Robert says it was one of the great thrills of his life. That's next on The World Cafe. Our guest on The World Cafe today is Robert Plant. The lead singer of Led Zeppelin has released his second CD working with guitarist Justin Adams, who joins us.
The new album, The Mighty Rearranger, follows 2002's Dreamland. In between the two albums, Robert and Justin travel to northern Mali to attend and perform at a festival in the desert, a remote festival of mostly African music staged to coincide with a gathering of the nomadic Tuareg tribesmen who inhabit the region. There's a film of the festival in the desert that is available on DVD and captures Robert's performance, as well as the strange sight of a gathering where camels intermingle with the audience and the performers. Robert Plant talks about his experience.
When we were working on Dreamland, Justin had already been to Tizdas, to out into the Sahel with Tinariwen, and had recorded there. And he said, "I'm going to go back to this festival next January." And I said, "Well, if you go, I've got to come with you." So, like 11 months later, you know, we're on a plane loaded up with adventurers and scallywags, and it was all because of Justin's links and a sense of adventure. You know, your nostrils flare, but then you do very silly things and you make liaisons with strange people to get to where you've got to go.
Justin, you should talk a little bit about this, because this festival is like none other. You look out from the concrete stage, and what does the audience look like?
Well, there's this when we played. There was Robert and myself, Skin, and two French guys playing with us, and just looked out. I'd say there were probably about 700 Tuareg, the men veiled, the women with fantastic jewellery in their hair, all wearing these beautiful indigo robes, and a lot of guys on camels. That's really how they get around. There's no roads. It's a serious sand. And they really know how to strike a pose. They're some of the best posers in the world, and it's all about stature and poise. They have swords, and they really look like they know how to use them. And these are tough, very noble, and very funny people. You know, so it's
this is their festival to begin with, and then they put the music on top of it.
Basically, as nomads, they need to have festivals where they get together, and especially for kind of courting and exchanging news. But there's been a lot of war in the north of Mali over the past 20-30 years, and so at the moment there's been a relatively calm little time, and so the Malian government and the Tuareg local governors were really looking to bring Westerners in and to try and open up a part of the country which is incredibly poor and has been closed to Westerners for some time. And so it was originally a French band that I was working with called Lojo who made the original connection. We went out for the first festival in the desert, which was really, really rootsy, but an incredible experience. I found myself as the stage manager wandering off to a tent in the dark where I'd find a load of guys sitting around completely veiled in the dark in a tent, and I'd say, excuse me, are you the griots from Timbuktu? Because if so, could you come to the stage by 5:30? Because you're needed for a sound check. I'm trying to explain this to guys who'd never really been on a stage before as such. They play. I mean, they're incredible players. But the whole sort of thing of a concert as such was a new one, really.
Well, probably more interesting in some ways than your reaction to the music you heard there was their reaction to the band.
Yeah, well, they love guitar, and I think they completely get it. I mean, you don't... that's one of the great things about going to Africa or the Middle East, for me, is that... when you're there, you begin to realize that all these kind of separations and ideas that people are really different and that it's all, you know, it's like going to Mars. It's not, you know. And they, you know, when Robert starts singing, they totally know. They 100% know what that's all about. Yeah. You know, there was no difficulty. I didn't feel, you know, that there was anything they didn't get. They can't understand the lyrics and we can't understand their lyrics, but you know, they understand dancing and music, you know.
I think the way that we played there and the way that we do play quite for perhaps 40-50% of the time right now on this tour of the United States is totally understandable for those guys, for those people. I think the harder big chordal stuff that is part of the kind of the tough aspect of the rock and roll influence within what we do would be too much for him. But I think the, say with Dreamland, If I Ever Get Lucky, which was one of the songs that we played at that there in Timbuktu, it works because it's got, as Justin was saying before, it's got that kind of trancy ambient thing, which is when you see these guys play, there aren't a lot of explosions with the Tuareg music. There's much more of that kind of dreamscape musical ingredient. Works. It works perfectly.
Some, a lot of the things that you can see overtly influencing Led Zeppelin are there in both of these musics.
That's right.
We have a live performance of When the Levee Breaks, which is a good example of what you can how you can take a song and work it out. Maybe Justin could talk a little bit about how with the conversations about redoing this.
Yeah, I mean, it's when we, as a band, when we sort of take on doing one of the Led Zeppelin tracks, I guess what we're thinking about is how to make it really alive, and we're very conscious of, okay, this is not a covers band, and so it's trying to find the real spirit of in the music. And you know, When the Levee Breaks on record is such an incredible piece of work. We felt, okay, well, one thing, let's not start it with the same. Let's try and find the power in it from a different source than, you know, because how could you compete with the drum intro on the record? So we found another way that I think it's got its own power, but it's with acoustic guitar and stand up bass and singing, you know.
And this is what it sounds like. This is When the Levee Breaks live from Robert Plant and the Strange Sensation.
Mama, you got to move. hurry. Oh, mama, 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 but I can't take you.
When the Levee Breaks, Robert Plant and the Strange Sensation. We're having a chance to talk with Justin Adams, guitarist, and Robert Plant about this music, this band, and this journey. And Robert, one of the reasons why we're spending time talking about Morocco and talking about Mali is that these are the things that you have had with you for years, but are moving you and are moving things forward for you with music. And there is a song on here which I think we should talk about, which is Tin Pan Valley, which kind of pokes at maybe your contemporaries who aren't as involved. And that must be frustrating.
Well, I don't know. It depends on how you want the sort of the ingredients of your life to run and whether or not there are, you know, I mean, it's very evident that the cycles of life, you can't predict how they're going to change.
Right.
And I think that the essence of what I was trying to get to in the song was that often these changes are almost subliminal. And you do move from, you know, you can go back to things later on and say, okay, well, it's time I didn't do that now. It's time I moved over here, or I've got nice kids and, you know, okay, the marriage is split up, but I've got this nice young girl and she, you know, raises horses or whatever it is. And people become, they go into another place. And that's absolutely their entitlement. It's just that I think that if you lose it too quickly, or if you're, there's a sort of almost an invisible move which dictates the way that your life is going to really slow, and you lose that. I know so many people who've lost that sparkle. People who are my contemporaries, who once upon a time could set the world on fire, but now they're playing to their strengths without even knowing it. You know, there's a kind of move into the kind of easy life and the easy way of doing things with people with great voices who could still rise to the challenge of interpreting great songs without it actually just playing into the sort of floppy underbelly of Americana.
And you're also challenging the audience too to not keep looking back.
If we really were making a huge impression, these records that we make would have been sung, our praises would have been sung from coast to coast, and you wouldn't be able to hear us for the sound of approval. But it isn't working like that, because most people do want to hear, you know, a catalogue and a great, you know, library of American songs. Right. Everybody wants to get, you know, Moon in June. And I did that with the Honey Drippers to a degree, for a bit of a laugh, to keep Ahmet Ertegun from nagging at me all the time about why don't you get Charles Brown in on piano and do Drifting Blues or whatever it is. So, I think Tin Pan Valley was... I just want things to explode now and again. I don't want everybody to end up, you know, going for the Canderel at the same time.
This is Tin Pan Valley in live version with Robert and the Strange Sensation.
Conversation filled with 20th century cool. My fears may flirt with cabaret, some fake the rebel yell. Me, I'm moving up to higher ground, I must escape the hell. Richard Christian women are stained of spotless wives. A perfect destination inside a perfect world. I take the bottle to the baby, you take the hammer to the pearl.
A live version of Tin Pan Valley from Robert Plant and The Strange Sensation. How does a rock god in his 50s still carry it off on stage? We find out as our interview with Robert Plant continues on The World Cafe. We're back on The World Cafe. We have a chance to talk with Robert Plant about the music and things around this new album, The Mighty Rearranger, which I think he's downplaying. I think for... you know, certainly when they're not singing praises, it's not a number one album, but for people who are doing what you're doing, this album has really found an audience. And I think that that is a real challenge from where I'm sitting in radio and this kind of thing. It's a real challenge to make a really relevant record like this. And I think that's kudos to the band and you and the whole situation for getting that to happen. And I wanted to play Shine It All Around, which seems to be a song that... seems to keep all parts of this equation happy. But this one has a bit of, if you were talking about
about skin, Tyson being the Haight-Ashbury end of things. There's part of that going on in this too, I think.
It's also a song, if you like, of celebration. I mean, it is about, for crying out loud, this is what we've got. Let's make the most of it, you know, which to me, it's kind of a very simple thing, but it actually is, I hate to say it and it sounds so twee, but it is like it's laying it down. It's the way I want it to be. It's not always the way it is, but that's the way you got to look at it. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, you know, this is the land that I love, painted all over troubled, you know, and it's a strong piece.
Definitely. And I think that's part of what people react to as well. This is a live version of Shine It All Around from Strange Sensation.
Thank you.
Shine It All Around, Robert Plant and the Strange Sensation, and Robert and Justin Adams for getting a chance to talk with them about this this music and the new album today on the Cafe. Robert, I had a chance to watch the show last night. I was really happy to see how you carry yourself as somebody of your age as a frontman. There's other ways to look at it. You know what I mean? You could do you think about, God, there are things I can't do anymore that would just make me look foolish? Or
well, I do actually occasionally put my foot up onto the monitor and put my shoulders back and do the sort of leonine main bit. And I see people laughing because they know that I'm taking the piss out of the whole rock vocalist syndrome. And I was one of the first guys ever to wear a girl's blouse with so much skill and style. But I feel really cool about the way I'm doing it. And I also know that because the music is sultry.
Right.
And it does have a certain amount of sensuality about it, especially because a lot of the rhythms and the loops and the stuff that we use, it's pretty sexy stuff. So there's no, you know, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to go clipping along in my stack-heeled shoes, head-banging Clive Dimas drum parts, which is, I think, what I had to do with Bonzo because they were so stated and sparing. And also there were long periods of instrumentation when I could actually go off and make a cup of tea in those days and come back a revived sex god. Well, now I feel very, very comfortable. And it's the way that we've developed the projection now with the way that we move quite naturally. Skin is lurking behind some very, very pink or magenta light, and as he comes towards me and the light catches his eyes through the sweat in his hair, I don't know whether to beat a hasty retreat and leave the building, leaving a trail of $100 bills on the floor, or rugby tackle him. But there's a lot of lurking and lurching going on, which is great. It's
cool. And weaving out in and out of the band, which is kind of fun. You seem like more like just a member of it.
Well, I am, for Christ's sake. I mean, let's get this right. If the music wasn't here, there'd be no lyrics, you know. And I haven't been so charged up in a continual run of one tune following another. I mean, Justin will bear me out. I said as we began to develop this in very simple environment, and after about 3 or 4 months we were beginning to get this huge catalogue of pieces of music to nuance and to twist and turn, and I said, I've got nothing to sing about. And then I realised that I've got everything to sing about. I think it began with Somebody Knocking, rather like Dylan did that High Water Everywhere, the Charlie Patton song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I started moving more and more into all those great terms from Mississippi. The great, you know, that black poetry which was never written down, but it's so beautiful. You know, the whole deal of that kind of African hocus-pocus stuff, the whole deal of the magic in the Delta and those old African shadows. And I got it, and I opened up again.
Old black snake, he crawling, slip sliding, crawling across my floor. Old mule come, he jumping, he kicking, kicking in my
Somebody's Knocking off the new Robert Plant and the Strange Sensation disc, The Mighty Rearranger. Our thanks to Robert Plant and to Justin Adams for talking with us today on The Cafe.